I would like to today talk about event-driven infrastructure, what I was basically trying to achieve for the last years I'm working. So first, I want to talk about, does that work at all? Yeah, good. So a little bit talk about myself. So basically, that's me on the left side. And that basically my wife looks exactly the same. So my name is Bo, I'm working at Automotive, and what I'm doing is basically telemetry, automotive, observability. If you ever draw a car, the infotainment you see there, that's what we do. We do these maps and integration with cockpits and all this kind of stuff. Lamborghini, Porsche, Audi, Volkswagen, all of that. Some Ford, that's basically what we do. Telemetry is when you drive the car and then you have a fleet control and then you want to look what's happening in your car. So basically that's it's an observability, of course. So I'm doing also embedded Linux distros, tools, automotive safe Linux. I do some BSD stuff. When I was working at SUSE, I was doing Ansible Salt, UNI SUSE Manager, and I invented this thing called Saltsible, which you connect Salt with Ansible. Yeah, and that thing happened to me recently, so it's also AI image, okay. But I have now three kids, and life goes on. So, SysInspect, I will hold a little bit if you want. You can look at that. Basically, what is that? It's the automation and infrastructure management, right, with accident and root cause analysis. So, it's not just that you have a typical yes, no, failed, not, but it's root cause analysis and system that inquires and look if your particular system or your systems together, they working as expected. So basically, what is it, right? So let's talk about that. I was in one conference the other year, and Charity Major said that brilliant thing. That's her quote. So observability is the system's fundamental property, right, on inferring internal state from external outputs. And that's basically academic way of saying we cannot see what the thing is doing, right? So we watch when it coughs, and then we just reconstruct the crime scene, right? So logs, metrics, and traces, right, they are not the system, they are just evidence, right? And without enough evidence, right, the debugging of the system is just fiction. So, first of all, let's talk about it. It's basically all about money, right? That's why you want to know what your system doing. And when you do the failure at architecture, just one talk, you know, and you fix it. If it is coding, and AI kind of make it weird these days, I do exist. I don't have account on Claude and Anthropic at all. I don't use these things. But I kind of understand what's happening around. And still, if you make a mistake there, the price is going up, right? So if you do the integration, that's already several teams involved, and they are, like, start fighting each other. What's happening? Why it is not working? And the things get heated up when acceptance, and then you have schedulers and suppliers and are starting talking, being involved. The cost of the failure rises and rises. And then if it is in production, right, that's really scary, especially if it is automotive. So because in automotive you have a chip, right, silicon, and you burn your stuff there forever, and then if you make a bug and you printed 50 million of these, you lost the money, and you do it again. And so, well, what SysInspect is, right? It's a testing system with temporal logic. How many of you know what temporal logic is? Nobody. Okay. So the temporal logic, right, is a rigorous mathematical framework for reasoning about time and state changes. So you compare changes in state. And temporary logic is not what it is, right? It's not temporary. Temporary logic, whether I was using this night 2 o'clock in the night thinking that I made this presentation good. So root cause analysis and telemetry, it also does that. So it basically, it explains why state machine or whatever it does not mean the, does not mean, mean the expectation. And the configuration management, it was kind of like collateral damage, because I never planned to do the configuration management. There are a lot of systems that does this today, and still, you know, it happened. Why? Because I thought, you know, if I can read the system, if I can compare the system, I probably can write to the system and set up it the way that it meets the expectations. So that's why I decided to add this functionality as well, but that was not the, the main intention. So, now we are living in two worlds, you and me, so to say. Some of you who are doing Edge kind of like start to be in my shoes, but still not there. So, basically, most automations expect a royal kitchen, right? And system spec just can cook a dinner for you with a lighter and a can of beans. Why? Because basically that's how it looks like. You need some tool, not a problem. DNF install, zipper install, apt-get install, you have it. In my world, when I'm dealing with devices like these, you know, there is nothing like that. It would be very good for you if you would find the place where you can write at all, you know, and it's usually overlay.fs. So, what's Citizen Spec, how it acts like? So typically, right, only kernel network and X4 there, and the Citizen Spec is good to go. So it installs its agent on the target, and it brings all its own stuff together. And typically, other systems do not do that. Basically, the same thing needs full user space. It does not do that. It requires other tool installed. Also not. It's designed to assert system integrity. So it first asserts and observes what is in the system, right? And that's basically what it is for. Everything is a module. So as long as you stick to the protocol and the contract between your module or script, whatever, to what Citizen Spec wants, you're good to go. And I had this funny item in Red Hat campus last week in Brno, because I can run Ansible modules on the target that has no Python installed. And they started asking me questions, how you do this? And it works, yeah. Magic. So you see, exec is not it's not exactly delivery, right? So, like, what I mean here? Now we're talking about the problem here. Ansible, if you know the tool, right? So it's like sending surgeon instructions over Zoom session, and you see the connection drop off, and then surgery should stop, right? See, the Citizen Spec is leaving the surgeon in the room. That's the difference. And then now the Ansible, right? If it loses the network, well, it stops the process. It just says, no network, sorry, I cannot do anything. Salt is a little bit better, which is used right now in SUSE Manager. And it keeps operating, but you know, it still can misplace the paperwork after that. So it may lose the jobs or lose return. You don't know what's happening still. And Citizen Spec actually journals the network. So it's like covering the whole thing. So in other words, SaltStack would survive the failure, network failure. And for sysinspect, network failure is just like normal operation. So this is the 100% truth that we know works all the time, right? So you have a controller, you have 100% reliable network, and you always have success, right? So that's exactly what happens every time. Also, this is true, if the previous one. So typically, if you talk about configuration management systems, they are usually write-only automations. They look like that. So basically, what it is, right? They report green, but kind of they run broken. So you don't know what they really do, you know. They feel ordered, yeah, but causality unknown. So you don't know what is the consequence about that. Opaque runtime, right? It hides the truth. And they are usually doers. They are not deciders and not thinkers, right? They just, you told them to do, and it does that. That's it. So in one conference, someone says, we can bootstrap the universe from one command. Yes, you can, but is that what you want to do? That's the question, right? And so, you see, some can keep running during a job after a master disappears. That's fine. It's good. But try to assigning the new job to the system that is offline, and you don't know where is it. So then your system publishes something into the void, and then you hope for the best. So no. And apparently, sysinspect is journaling this call. So basically, the minion, when reconnects, it collects the work, it starts to doing it, execute it, and make the processing, and then basically returns back. So it's not designed for survive the network failure. It's designed to operate as this is normal environment for it, right? So sysinspect itself is model-based. If you know anything about Ansible or SaltStack, think of it like playbook or formula. That's what model is, but not, it is not. It's just like fraction of that. It's not AI model, so, okay. So model, basically you're modeling the whole, your system, and you say, this is the expectation I have, this is the state I expect, and under different state of the system, this and that should happen. So that's your modeling, right? So in automotive, for example, you have car, all right? You sit in the car. If it is not electric still, you start the key and you hear, you know, that's first stage, and then happens, right? The big motor starts. That's second stage. And then you off the car, the motor is off, that's the third state. So on the every state, you can see and inspect what is happening in the car. So if the starter runs forever and motor doesn't start, you have a problem. But you know why. So it does also verification first, right? So it's know why you do it before you do it. So you don't just do it, you know, should you do this or not. First class telemetry, basically. So whatever you do, it's all telemetrized, so to say, right? And deciding your telemetry without touching the execution. Autonomous local continuous work, right? So the node can keep running and do it on its own, even the network breaks. Explicit execution versus delivery semantics, right? So doing the work and delivering the report is not the same thing. Durable network journaling, as I already mentioned, graph state and constrained reasoning, basically, yes. So it calculates what you have to do and under which circumstances has to be what's called. So before it starts anything to do. And decisions to events control flow. So let's talk about a little bit Schrödinger automation. So you will be you'll tell me who is right here. So this is how it looks like, right? So you have a controller here, and you have a target here. And then controller says, do the job. It actually accepts that. Meanwhile, the network gone. And it says, job complete, and returns it back. And this guy is waiting. Time out. Okay, retry. Meanwhile, the network is restored. It gets again, do the job. And this happens and happens and happens. It's a pretty nasty situation, to be honest. And in this case, actually, Ansible is better because it says, there is no network, I'm not doing it. Punkt. But if you have a distributed mesh somewhere, you know, then these things are happening very often. And then at the end, they asking each other questions. So basically, this is the problem. And typical configuration management, if you go to that area workflow, is look like that. You start, you do stuff, you have probably success, and you pray it's really correct one. So that's basically the experience all the time. What does the CIS expect, right? So most automations, basically, I would say, they start with the desired state, and then they become offended, you know, when the reality disagrees. Like, it's not what my architecture diagram says, you know, because the reality is different. And CIS expect starts with the reality first. So first you observe what is actually happening, and then you decide based on the evidence and locally and verify and see what's actually changed, right? So you observe this. You have telemetry probe signals. Then you decide what to do, right? And then if verification fails, we do not declare success because we know that command returns zero. We actually go the round again. So then you verify that, yeah, and then you go back to the control. And this kind of sounds like obvious to everyone, right? That is what you should do typically. But you know, this sounds also obvious. You have to check if your parachute is going to open when you jump. But sometimes it's not happening. And so that's basically how it looks like at architectural level, you know, under the hood, right? So you have a model description. And then you have hardware and software. So here you have your wonderful, elegant claims and expectations. And there you have the facts and reality where your wonderful, elegant claims and expectations will die. It's usually the case. And so here you have actions that they go into the system and takes the information back. And these are building blocks that it gives to the core of the CIS inspect to say, hey, this is what is there. Now, is that what you expect, right? And so you have this assertion and decisions machine. And then you have events. It says, no, it's not, or yes, it does. And you can say what to do on each event, right? And then it gives to the reactor, and the reactor does something, which it can go again to the actions and claims and call itself again, which is pretty simple concept, apparently, in implementation and in handling, which can grow into the enormous complexity because you can call different models from each models, and you can make a very easily self-healing system, for example, stuff like that. So another feature of that is open telemetry is everywhere. So basically, unsupervised software, you know, it's like unsupervised toddler. You know, it's suspiciously quiet, probably covered with something, and absolutely not doing what you think it should do. That's if your system is completely opaque and you don't know what it does, you have no telemetry there, that's exactly your toddler there. You don't want that. So telemetry in the system spec basically is a backbone of everything, right? So you decide the following things. What to measure, right? When to emit, what to emit and what to aggregate, how to react, and so on. Apparently, if you know about anything about telemetry, here is my sibling project, which fills the gap in OpenTelemetry. So OpenTelemetry basically like OpenTelemetry to logging is the same like OCI specification to containers. So underneath of the containers can be Docker, Podman, Yuki, CRUN, RunSea, whatever stuff. But it's still OCI specification. The same thing is happening to OpenTelemetry. You have different implementations of that, but they all go with the same specification. And the Logjet apparently fills the gap because specification of the OpenTelemetry says throw away stuff and it flies somewhere, right? There is no act back, so that's it. And if you lost the network and you don't know you lost the network, then you lost the thing because it like flew somewhere and gone. So Logjet basically apparently that a small little collector, ring buffer, reverse ring buffer, wire protocol, wire buffer. I mean, it has tons of various features. You can convert to parquet, you can query that, and so on. It's like very, very small daemon, but you can also use it as a shared object in your project. You can embed it, and so on and so forth. So, and it produces the stream, byte stream protocol, the file basically. This is basically unbreakable because if you wrote it in the, let's say, black box and you have holes in it, so only that part is lost, but the rest you can still look what it is. Unlike the other protocols, they can be broken entirely. Like Parquet, for example, you receive the whole thing, but the description of the whole file is in the footer. So if you did not get the end of the file, you had nothing. And that's one of the differences, right? So, okay. So when you do the request here, it gets to the open telemetry. It gets telemetrized, right? You do this schedule, you get an event. You get verification, you get observer, observing something, executing, deciding, reporting. So basically what it does, so later instead of asking what happened, why it doesn't work, right? We can ask much healthier question, which broken component actually did and what? And you can absolutely see what it does. And of course, you have control of all of these. You can say what to report, how to report, when to report, or if report at all. Maybe you want to only to see what kind of decisions it does and nothing else. So it's up to you, right? And you can format that, you can fold that. If you know about machine learning, like drain tree protocol, something like that, if it rings bell to you, so basically you can MapReduce the data, you can fold, and it has a lot of all the basically operations with the telemetry, because telemetry usually has gigabytes of data, and what you're looking is like 10 kilobytes, and that's all you need. So there are algorithms to reduce all that stuff. And it's also there. So I would show some demo if you're not against that. So the only problem is that I need to have eyes on my back. I will try to do something like that. Oh boy, okay. So what do we have here? Okay, so we have demo. Good. So SysInspect is basically written in Rust entirely, and it's operating in binaries. So modules are typically binary, not scripts, because, you know, again, going to some unknown Linux or NetBSD or something like that, and I don't know what to expect there. Actually, on BSD, I know what to expect, but on Linux, who knows? Just can be kernel with file system, right? That's all. And in the embedded world, we usually say, if you know your system, why would you need binls in the first place? You know your system, right? So, it is compiled with Mazel, because that's... sorry, I tapped the caps lock. Right. And you basically have all this tree after you compile all this stuff. So this is basically a distribution. Like I said, I'm typing a little bit backwards, so please bear with me. Let's install it. I'm actually a fan of text-based user interfaces, because they are very simple. They work everywhere through the SSH. They don't ask for network and Apache installation and something like that. And they are fantastic. So I made this one. And two things to understand. SysInspect can install itself without packaging, and it's also fully package compatible. So you can use RPMs, Debian, if you want, whatever. But sometimes you don't need to do that, and some systems do not have package manager at all. So that's what it is for. Let's install it custom. Again, this user interface is slightly buggy yet, so I was hammering it last 2 years, and so and it's still not perfect. So, but anyway, so let's inspect. So let's do that. We enable that self-signed TLS certificate because you know, for the sake of the demo, and it's basically done. It's set up and it says what you have to do. So you basically abandon from here. You no longer need this. Bin. Okay. So now, how to do it better? Seriously, it's usually you have to be monitored here to see what I'm doing. Okay, so we start the master, and we can see it does something. So it's already started, and all seems like okay. So register minion we still cannot, because we need to first create a repository. A repository means for every platform, for every architecture, you have to build the set of your modules, right? So it knows if it is FreeBSD, it's for FreeBSD, if it is NetBSD, NetBSD, if it is Linux on ARM, on MIPS or something, so it manages all that stuff. Again, you can do this all from packaging, but it's kind of like more cumbersome, apparently. So we create this. We have modules here, libraries, models, sensors, profiles, and let me make it slightly smaller because it's really big. Yeah, like that. It's good for you guys, yeah? Okay, so let's add the modules first. So we go to the here. It's somewhere, it's demo. It's here. And then we go to the, actually it is simple, it's here. And these modules. So these all the modules that are coming with the distribution, they are pretty small, because in SysInspect, I don't really care about modules at all. Actually, even though I don't have cloud account, as I said, you still can generate modules the same with AI pretty fast, you know, these days, because this is basically a glue code, right? But the whole logic how this is SysInspect thinks, that's not something that AI can do. And so I just give you a small bits that it does. So let's do that. Yeah? Done. And I always actually, when I was working with Ansible and Salt, I always wanted to have this kind of like repository overview, so I know what are these modules are. For example, if you look at network HTTP, what is this, right? So you see there, it says what it is, and you have the whole arguments, how to use it, you have the options, it doesn't have any manual, how to do, what to do, and so on, right? So all of these stuff, they are like, for example, Lua, how to do, this is arguments, manual, where to put, how to develop for it, it's all there. It's kind of like nicer, you know what to do right away in front of you instead of figuring out what script does. We probably need to add the libraries. Yes, so where it is again? It's like, yeah. Let me try here. In this case, I want to add the Python library because I want to run the Python on the machine that does not have Python. And the machine that does have Python, I don't want to run Python. That's a little demo to show you that it will decide what to do. Now let's add the models. So models basically YAML files is a descriptive language there. So for example, let's add InfoPing. Let's add the others. I could do it a little bit better, but let's do the key pair here, and let's do no Python. All right. Oops. Ah. Sorry. Right. Here, Python shows broken. Actually, even though it's supposed to, it does correcting, but it's unfinished yet. I'll show you something in a minute. Now, sensors. SysInspect has sensors that sniffs all your system around. It's eBPF for Linux kernel, for example. It looks for file system, looks for networking, it looks if your network traffic is correct but laggy, for example. It looks for your CPU if it's working but has three spikes, for example, per a minute, which is, for example, in automotive is not allowed or something like that, right? So this sensor, and it has a lot of these things. So let's add them, but they also are YAML files. So go here, and they are actually one I have here, right? And one I have, I probably don't need any other. No, that's it. Profiles. We are not going to really go through that, but for example, you can create one, and what it is. You know, if you have a salt stack, for example, right, the whole client has everything in it. So if you have a little machine, you install that client on the machine, and it has everything. But all what you need is probably just to know if the host pings and nothing else. So I wanted to create a client that has on the cluster only what it actually needs to run and throw away everything else. And it can be very, very small. So you can add those models, and you can also add from the model. So it say, I want on that client run, for example, these three models, right, all of them. And so I add selected, and as you can see, plus, I guess, it infers which modules needed for that. Here, apparently, missing module Python, but actually it's not missing because it's not finished yet. It's a Python runtime as a plugin comes to the client and runs another plugin for that plugin, so it's like double fold. And right now, the UI is not handling that, so it thinks it's missing, but it's really not because we already added that here and no Python is there. And the platforms is the most important part. So here you go to the demo, there, here, and that's your client that you're going to install. All right, so it knows which version is this, which platform, and it's not executing it because you can also have ARM, MIPS, and other stuff for other platforms and so on. So it looks at the binary and knows what it is. So basically it. Now we have to register a Python. I have four machines running there, also virtual machines. And for example, let's install it on Debian. I have this host name, and that's how installation looks like. Done. Now, if you look at that, that's your minion running. You can remotely look at the system log. It already synced everything. You see, it automatically syncs all the artifacts and behind the scenes all updated. You can also look traits. Traits are to salt stack like grains, something like that. So you have all of them here. You can see what it does. And every Rust programmer in the world must do this stuff, you know. So I'm sorry, I did my own as well. So basically, that's a top. But even though I wrote it, I know I'm biased. But I think this is the most useful one because I use HTOP or BTOP. They look very beautiful, but I don't understand anything on the screen. So, how to sort which process takes the most CPU or something like that. But here, kind of like you have it. And you can actually even you can filter out what it is, and they when they start using more CPU, they get to be like highlighted down to the like flame effect. But right now, the machine is very, very quiet. Okay, so we have it. Now we probably want to register one more, just for sake of why not. Let's do the Alpine Linux. I have this one. I hope I typed it right. Yeah, that's it. This is how you're installing the client on the machine, right? And it figures out automatically what is the target system, and if your artifact repository supports that target platform, it will install the client just like that. Now, you know, if you, again, worked with Ansible or Salt, you know that calling these things on command line interface is really a royal pain in somewhere. So I wanted to always to have something like more visual than that. And so I come up with something like that. Why it's not? Ah, sorry. Why my keyboard is not responding. What's happening? Ah, because I pressed the caps lock. I'm sorry for that. Okay, so basically, you call things visually. So you don't have to go and study all that YAML, what the hell it does, and so on. It just automatically shows you what you can do. You write your own model, and it will automatically find out what it is, validate it, and all this kind of stuff. So as you can see, query, right? So you can right away query something else, right? And it basically works. You can read more about that, but point is query, which host you query, and then what exactly you're querying, right? So let's start from InfoPing, just ping the host, right? But we're not just pinging host, right? We want something cooler than that. So we go here, and we do the full scan. Or you can call only some parts of the model, right? So for example, system info, and you can see what does it do. So you can read about this model completely, what it do. And it even tell you what system info does, the full kernel identity fingerprint, comprehensive system facts inventory. But we don't do that. We will just call everything, because we want real ping. But let's do that. So it will take a while because it has to ping Google, and then it goes back and tells you everything. Yeah, I know. Thanks. Basically, this is what it is, right? So it shows you all the data, basically, and you can infer that. Let's do something else. Let's call the Python on Alpine Linux, which has no Python, and let's not call it on a Debian that has it, right? Let's do that. And it did. So on Deborah, right, it says no proof. The yellow says not applicable. So basically, yeah. And it has target, it has Python, no. Alpine, it applicable because it does not have Python installed. So Python proof, and you can see here all the Python example just ran. So Python works on Alpine Linux where there is no Python installed. Good. And last not least, I want to see something interesting here. Sensors, right? The sensors doing the whole thing. They watching some artifacts on your machine. So, and they generating events. So if stuff happens, they communicating back if they can to the master, and then they reconciling. If you have a mesh, so then they call to other masters if basically to find out to who to talk, or they work on their own alone until master say, hey, I'm back, so they return back stuff to it. So what it does, imagine you have, I stole this demo from Configuration Management Camp in Hand. The guy called James Shubin, he made Configuration Management, MGMT basically, and he does this demo. And I wanted to replicate that, so I did. But he's using etcd, and I don't. That's just like it. What it does, it basically, UI is still not the best one, in best shape. So what it does, it just basically pushes the examples on private and public keys on the machine and watches them, right? And if you lose one, it restores you. If you lose the private, it regenerates you one. And I want to show you that part. So right now it says the key is published, is there. And let's go there. And let's see that. I have still, I hope, one minute. So. Yeah. So these are keys. I delete them, and they're back instantly. I could show you even more how fast they are, but they like really rocket fast. They immediately back, and they are stored on the master. So basically, that's event based. The last, very last demo. It's basically how to update the cluster, because I'm not a monster, and I know what happens if you need to update stuff. So let's do this. We have, for example, a new system. For that, I just made different SHA checksum. I slightly compiled differently in order to just have different SHA, because Rust is very much rebuildable. So 242, right? So you see that new checksum, okay? And here you see immediately saved cluster upgrade required. So let's this is my cluster of two, and they immediately say you have to update that. So how fast you think the cluster update will happen? That fast. That's it. Done. So you go here, you see the machine is there, it's really functioning, and if you look at defined traits, you see the binary is used that. Time's up, he says. So basically, all what it is, that was the demo. Last word, holding more modern complex system models in your mind always ends in failure. You need a system that shows you what your stuff is doing. You need to have a telemetry and observability. Thank you.